lack of having worked on the part of the two parties to overcome huge issues of mistrust. But now that this situation happened, one hopes that not only the warring parties, but also the South Sudanese who are supporting the parties, and including those who are who sit on the fence when it comes to the two parties, that peace is of paramount importance, and we should do whatever is in our power to make sure that there is no return to full-fledged civil war. And I hope also that the international community, including the region, IGAD, would realize that the agreement that we have is very tenuous, and not the least because of the provision that allows the two armies to be present in one country, and especially in one city. And that is what happened. The city became too small to accommodate two parties, the armies of the two parties that have a huge distrust among them.
Yes, talking about the regional leaders and the international community, we have heard from Mr. Ban Ki-moon, who is the UN Secretary General, suggesting three issues. First, to the Security Council earlier last week, that first, the issue of implementing the arms embargo on South Sudan, impose targeted sanctions on individuals responsible for the latest fighting, and ensure the reinforcement of the UN mission in South Sudan. What is your take on this as an analyst?
His proposals are not new, it has to be pointed out. These are proposals that have been there since the violence erupted in 2013. In early 2014, mid-2014, these ideas have been there, and there is no sign that they would help. In fact, they may even complicate things. So I think, and this I think reflects the what one would say has been the challenge that the international community, including the region, has been dealing with. They have not been able to successfully engage the political leadership and as well as the military leadership on both sides of the conflict effectively. And so while it sounds good that you can impose an arms embargo and targeted sanctions and everything, they increase the level of the UN force here in South Sudan, including changing the mandate, the unfortunate reality is that this would not help, because we have enough troops in South Sudan when it comes to the UN force. So I'm not sure what could be achieved with the increase of the level of forces. So what is important for what I think is important that should be done, which has not been done effectively, is to engage both sides at the highest level, issuing communiques and press releases and requests far away from the theater of this violence.
Yes, that's
not going to help.
Yes, Zakaria, that was my question I was going to ask you. You have just mentioned part of it now. What can be done actually to make sure the agreement is implemented and get going?
Well, there are several things that will need to be done, Sunny. First, you know, Dr. Riek Machar returned in April to Juba, and the transitional government was formed two days after his arrival. But so far, until recently when the violence flared up again, there was nothing tangible that was done by the transitional government. And why is that, someone would have to wonder? The simple answer is that the government does not have the resources that it needs in order to implement the agreement. And never mind about the friction in terms of differences that continue to plague the two sides, the two main signatories to the agreement. But if you don't have money to implement the agreement, then what is it worth for? Now the international community has retracted and said, well, we need reforms. Which reform could be done without really using the resources? the request, you know, what they meant when they, what they mean when they say the reform is that they want a small size government. Which small size government? It was the same actors who pushed for the expanded form of the government enshrined in the agreement. So instead of 21 ministries, we have to deal with 30 ministries, and that is a courtesy of the agreement. Instead of 332 members of National Legislative Assembly, that was increased to accommodate politicians who were in the bush on the, on the side of Riek, as 50 of the 68 individuals have come from there and the other political parties. And then the two armies as another exploded government. So what could be reform, and how do you tell someone who is already armed and carrying a gun to drop it and just disappear into the thin air? Does that make sense? That doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
And after all, the volume of the money that is said to be coming to South Sudan once the reform is undertaken is minimal. You know, you're talking about between $300 million to $400 million dollars a year. Well, that is only a 1 month expenditure if you consider the size of the government. So the international community has to swallow its pride if it really believes in ensuring peace in South Sudan, especially as the peace agreement was forced down with some of the difficulties that are underpinning its current state of affairs. So the international community would have to put the resources forward, that's one. Number two, the parties would have to be engaged, especially at the top level, to make sure that they overcome some of the differences that they have overcome. So in a sense, instead of just insisting on the agreement being a rigid document, the parties should be encouraged to really use the flexibility they have at their disposal in order to arrive at the issues that have not been properly dealt with. But that's not what you see. Either people say just implement the agreement as it is, and then on top of it, we don't have money. Figure out where the money will come from. This could be said might have been contributed to the situation that flared up in Juba recently, because you ask people to sit on their hands without doing anything, and then someone thinks that there would be peace at the end of the day. That doesn't make sense.
And finally, Zakaria, today is a Mandela Day. What lesson can we draw from the late Nelson Mandela that could help South Sudan?
Well, we should work for peace. This is incumbent upon all South Sudanese, including our leaders, of course, to ensure that we really resolve differences, our differences, in a peaceful manner. Not through violence means. We should realize that as long as we remain divided as a people and as a nation, our interests are going to be jeopardized. So we need to come together and put pressure on our leaders to really lead us in a way that will ensure our national unity and therefore safeguard our interests.